Last week we considered at length the halachas of Sfiras HaEmor. Besides the counting of the Emor itself, there's also the Avelus, which is associated with the Emor. So I want to explore a little bit the background of the mitzvah, the background of the Avelus. The Avelus is a very remarkable thing. We're talking about the fact that the Shas and Yevomus tells us that of the demise of the Talmid of Rabbi Akiva in between Pesach and Shavuos. A plague, and 24,000 people died in weeks. Talmidim, swept through his Talmidim. And that's, the Shulchan Aruch tells us, is that the root of the Avelus, that we have the mitzvah, a Sfiras HaEmor, has nothing to do with Avelus. It's a mitzvah. The Avelus is something which is superimposed on the Sfiras HaEmor. It's not part and parcel of Sfiras HaEmor. Pashtus is, some would probably dispute this, but Pashtus is that this came about after the Gaonic period. The earliest sources that the Tor Shulchan Aruch finds is Ibn Shu'ab. Ibn Shu'ab is a little before the Ramban, basically. Ibn Shu'ab is usually noted in history for his parshanut, not as a halachic source. But this is the basic, about the earliest source we have of some notion of Avelus. We don't have anything in between the Rabbi Akiva and the Gaonic period, nothing at all that tells us about Avelus. If it was Avelus, the Shas had 3 centuries to comment about it. Neri mentioned in Shas, not in Medrash. Rav Moshe Feinstein seems to assume, which is, I assume the same thing, that this came about after the Gaonic period because of the Crusades. Because Rav Moshe, as a tzal, was very, very machmer that he did not allow weddings in Chodesh Iyar. And I mentioned Shabbos. I spoke once at occasion about 3 years ago to speak to Rav David Feinstein on Friday afternoon. Someone in the shul wanted to make a chasana, I think 2 years ago. And the shaila was if they should make it in Sfira after Lag BaOmer. And I told him, I know Rav Moshe was not happy with it. So I called my contact with Rav David Feinstein, and he happened to be, he was standing with Rav David Feinstein. So he got right on the phone. And he says, I don't know even of a single instance when my father was matter a wedding post Lag BaOmer and Chodesh Iyar, even for Shasat Chak. So I don't know one wedding that he ever allowed, that anyone that ever asked him, that he told him to get married in Chodesh Iyar. Because he held that Chodesh Iyar was the principal time of the affliction of the Jews. And that's what this, the Avelus, the sphere, where it comes from, as you read in the Kinnas, is an ear, was the major troubles. So.
Attending one, or just
a patient one? Well, what's that? That's a different parsha altogether. I don't want to get involved in halacha questions. We'll get us sidetracked from what we want to be. So as I've often noted before, I have a proposal. You know, Jewish history has its tragedies. If you study Jewish history, no shortage of tragedies, persecutions, decrees, expulsions, whatever you want, lo aleinu, it's all there. Whenever you want it, whatever year you want it, there's something going on. So I'll turn back the calendar and I'll say, you know, Rabbi Isai, in the year 1019, this and this happened. I think that we should mark it with a day of mourning for the events that happened, this great tragedy which befell the Jewish people at 1019, 1,000 years ago. So I think that the reaction to me would be, well, listen, 1,000 years ago, I mean, since that time came Rashi, the Rambam, Rabbeinu Tam, the Rajba, a few other Rishonim, the Shulchan Aruch, the Vilna Gaon, the Chofetz Chaim, the Chazon Ish, all of them seem to have lived comfortably without having this day of Avelis. So all of a sudden you woke up 1,000 years after the fact and you want to make it an Avelis. But all the people that lived, the Gaon Olam that lived in the last 1,000 years, none of them have crossed their mind to do this. So we think you ought to go home and reconsider. So the same arises. Rabbi Akiva's Talmidim died, let's assume the beginning of the second century. That's approximately correct. Some in the first half of the second century, in all probability. That was the time that Rabbi Akiva was limed. He died somewhere about 140, 142 approximately. So it means in between 102 and 142, that's when he taught Torah, at the beginning of the second century of the Common Era. From that time until the Gaonic period is a solid 1,000 years. Nobody instituted Avelis for Rabbi Akiva's Talmidim for 1,000 years. So all of a sudden we woke up one fine day, oh, Rabbi Yisai, you know there was a tragedy in the Jewish world, the Talmidim Rabbi Akiva died. Oh, we better make a mourning period for that. And not one day's mourning, but I got into 33 days. It does not seem a very reasonable proposition. So I think that also reflects the fact that after the tragedies of the Crusades, they felt that there was a parallel tragedy at the same time of the year with the Talmidim Rabbi Akiva. So we would focus now upon that in light of the contemporary tragedy which paralleled the demise of Rabbi Akiva's Talmidim. I believe that's what happened. Now, if you look in the writings and kinnas of Rav Soloveitchik, Zatzal, you'll find the following. We have one of the kinnas is dedicated to the effect of the Crusades in the Rhineland. And his notes on that kinna, he has a very powerful observation. Where did Rashi study? Where did Rashi go to yeshiva? In Worms, in Germany. Because when Rashi's youth, the seat of Torah was Germany. That's where the major yeshivas were, that's where the Gedolim and Torah were, that's where the Svarim were written. Germany was it. That was the center of Torah in Europe. By the time Rashi reached maturity, it was no longer the case. The center of Torah now rose as Provence in southern France. If you wanted to learn, he came to France to learn. He didn't go to Germany anymore. Why? The Crusades destroyed the Torah, the yeshivas of Germany, the Sfarim of Germany, and the Gedolim of Germany were all destroyed. And the truth is we have very little Zeicher to it. We have very little even in Sfarim that survived that era from the Torah of Germany. Very little. This was the effect of the Crusades. It took the seat of Torah and it destroyed it. And the people of that era felt bereft. What's our future? The seat of Torah has been destroyed. The Gedolim are dead. The Sfarim are burned. How are we going to carry on? And at that they sort of parallel to Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva was a figure after the Churban Beis Hamikdash. And finally, it looked like there was a little light at the end of the tunnel. Rabbi Akiva, 24,000 Talmidim, 24,000 Tanoim under the tutelage of Rabbi Akiva. I mean, this looks like it's going to be, you know, we're really going to light a fire. Then Dulap Klal Yisrael. 5 weeks' time, it's all over. And the Gemara says in Yevamos, there were no great people to project the Torah into the next generation. Nobody to carry the Messiah. They felt in a very similar situation in the Gaonic period. After the destruction of the center of Torah in Germany, like, where are we? What's our future? So, looking back to Rabbi Akiva, reflected their own situation.
What do you say in the Gaonic period, but was it Rashi's Kufa already the Rishonim?
Oh, it's the end of the Gaonic, 1080. The Crusades is at the point of change. It started the Crusades at the end of the Gaonic period. And then went into the time of the Rishonim. It lasts for 2 centuries, about. So it lapped over. It started at the end of the Gaonic era, and it went into the time of the Rishonim. So there was a parallel between these 2 points in Jewish history. And they also wondered, what's our future? So this is... The mourning was a very practical concern. We're in the same place as the Talmid of Rabbi Akiva was. Now, why do we have Lag BaOmer? So far, I found 3 different reasons for it. 3 reasons. If you hold from the first minig, and apparently it has to do, that's what seems from the Vilna Gaon, with the cessation of the dying of the Talmidim of Rabbi Akiva. So why are we celebrating? So the Vilna Gaon cites the Gemara in Tainus, that at the end of the era of Meisei Midbar, so the 38th year, I think it says, they lay down in the Kfarim, that's what they used to do, and in the morning they all woke up and they got out. So that was Tu B'Av, when they finally decided that it was passed, so they celebrated. So he says that's why we celebrate when we no longer have the death of the Talmid of Rabbi Akiva parallel to the Meisei Midbar. I don't understand exactly the comparison. In the Meisei Midbar, people that were destined to die, the Rebbeinu Shlomo had Midas HaRachamim, and they lived. But what happened with the Talmid of Rabbi Akiva? Pashtus in the Gemara is that they all died. So the reason nobody died anymore, there was no one left to die. So what's the celebration? According to the first minig in the Shulchan Aruch, that you count the first 33 days according to the Gro, that's when it ended. Ended at that point. So what's the celebration? Now, we could perhaps argue, as I say, I don't have a source, but I've wondered, and then it would be parallel, the going would be very good, that the war Talmid of Rabbi Akiva that survived. And therefore, it's parallel with the Meisei Midbar. And when the Gemara says, Vayoilum Shomei, meaning to say that none of the Talmidim who survived them had the stature to be able to carry the Messiah. You can have many, there's many, many Talmidim in the Yeshiva. There's only a small number of them that could be the ones, the Gedolei Hador, to carry the oil of Torah and carry the Messiah carefully into the next door. That's a whole different story, who that might be. So perhaps that's the meaning of the Gemara, that there were Talmidim, and they were also, there was a Gzar Movus on them, and they stopped dying. So that's what we celebrated, at least some of them were spared, but they were not of sufficient greatness to project the Torah into the next door.
Sorry, I was just wondering on the same subject. Number one, wouldn't Rabbi Akiva have exhorted them to do tshuva and to show cover to each other? Number two, wouldn't he have
gotten
for them?
Listen, obviously he did all of those things, but it didn't help. It didn't help. I have always said that that's why I think that Rabbi Akiva said, is because of this. When he started with his new Talmidim, he said, Rabbi Yisai, we have to be very, very makpid about Avos Yisrael. I used to sit with 24,000 Talmidim, but we didn't have the right, for our level, the right appreciation of Avos Yisrael. And therefore, we were holding what we were holding. So I think that that was part of how we addressed what needed to be addressed. So perhaps that's the pshat. I don't know. But then at least I would understand what the Vilna Gaon's parallel was to the Beis HaMidbar. If you learn that the 33 days are not really precisely the days that they died, the 33 days, they died in 33 days, and we mark some 33 days in Sfira. So right smack in the middle of the day is the whole morning, we have Lag BaOmer. So what's Lag BaOmer about? Didn't mark, we're not saying historically we know exactly when they died and they stopped dying on this day. If we knew that, we would have kept the first minute. We don't know exactly. So Rav Moshe Feinstein Zatzal says, according to that, we have to assume that Lag BaOmer is rooted in the Hilula and the Yortzeit of Rav Shimon ben Yochai. Rav Shimon ben Yochai, as of Maimer and the Zohar, told his Talmidim on my Yortzeit, celebrate, because I'll go from one sphere in Haredin to the next. So it's a day that you should be happy. That's the second reason for Lag BaOmer. The Chidah, the Chayra, supplies a third reason in one of his songs. And this has always fascinated me, the pshat of the Chidah. The Chidah says that when did Rabbi Akiva found his new yeshiva? What was opening day in the new yeshiva? Opening day in the new yeshiva was on Lag BaOmer. Not the first Lag BaOmer, but in some subsequent year down the line, the new yeshiva opened on Lag BaOmer. That's what the Chidah writes. So that certainly, I think, would be a cause to celebrate, because this was the successor of Rabbi Akiva. He projected the Torah into the future. Who were his Talmidim? Rabbi Meir, Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Yosi, Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai, and Rabbi Elazar ben Shammua. The mainstays of the Mishnah. The Gemara says, "Kulu stam Torah liver the Rabbi Akiva." All the stam Mishnayis and the stam Sifro and stam this and stam, everything is Rabbi Akiva Shitas. Why? Because they were taught who carried forth the Messiah, the Talmidim of Rabbi Akiva. So everything is Levi Shitas Rabbi Akiva and Astam. So this was a signal achievement in Jewish history, a signal achievement that in one of our darkest hours, the Beis HaMikdash still destroyed, occupied by Rome with a very heavy Roman hand. And Rabbi Akiva produces five Talmidim that will carry Torah through this mess and ultimately connect with Rabbeinu HaKadosh in the Mishnah. So the Torah that we have today is because of these five Talmidim of Rabbi Akiva. A signal achievement. And perhaps that also was Nichlal, I don't know, but perhaps that when they undertook the Avelus, it was an eye towards Lag BaOmer too. In effect, saying that Rabbi Akiva went through one of the darkest moments in Jewish history. And yet, he remained undaunted. I mean, if I would have been Rabbi Akiva, I would have said, listen, it's obvious that Rabbeinu Shlomo is not interested in the Talmidim that I have, so let somebody else produce Talmidim. You know, nobody else has produced such a disaster that I've produced. But Rabbi Akiva didn't say that. He said, as the Gemara says, "Baboka tizra zarecho le'erav atanach yodecho." In your youth, do for Torah, and in your more advanced years, do for Torah. Don't throw in the towel. Because we don't know which one will be better, and perhaps both will succeed, and you'll really be hit a home run. So Rabbi Akiva, what we're looking back to is the fact that in a dark moment in Jewish history, when things looked very bleak, Rabbi Akiva stepped up and he preserved the Rabbeinu Shalom, he succeeded preserving the Rabbeinu Shalom's Torah. And perhaps when they started with Sfira and Lag BaOmer, it was the same thought. We're in a tough spot.
Wouldn't it have to be that way? Because otherwise, what would be the point of connecting they wanted to establish some kind of a velos related to the Crusades, what would be the purpose of connecting it to something that happened previously?
I tend to agree with you, unless they were looking at what happened at the end of the story. At the end of the story, Rabbi Akiva succeeds, and he revives Torah, and especially that's the symbolism of Lag BaOmer. That Lag BaOmer, according to the Chiddush, is the day of the revival of the Torah. That the Torah will survive. It's a Dvar Pella, and we understand it very, very well. Unfortunately, we understand it very well. In our time, the same question existed. When the Second World War ended, where were we headed? What was going to be? You know, we were shattered people with very few resources, economic resources, spiritual resources. And yet the Rabbeinu Shalom, look at the ness of the 70 years since World War II. The explosion of terror all over the world in a way that it hasn't been seen in 1,000 years or perhaps in 2,000 years. At the darkest moment in the Golos, all of a sudden, the lights went on. And they continue to grow, Be'ezus Hashem. So this is now, what are the reasons? It's interesting that this insight of the Chiddush really parallels two of the reasons that we have for this first Omer. If I've mentioned many times, mitzvahs come in three types: Eidos, Chukim, and Mishpatim. Right? That's what the Chacham said. Eidos, Chukim, and Mishpatim. A posik, Asher Tziva Hashem Elokeinu Eschem. So, Mishpatim certainly does not describe Sfiras HaEmor. Mishpatim are civil types of laws that every society enacts just for basic human existence in this world. So that does not fit for Sfiras HaEmor. They say it's a chayk, the mind rebels against the thought. We should just get up and count nights for no apparent reason, for no amad namaisa. So it has to fit into Eidos L'chor, meaning that there's a message, it's to connect us with some idea. So the Sefer HaChinuch, and he's a spin-off in a Nigladik version of the Mekubalim. The Sefer HaChinuch says that it's in anticipation of Kabbalah Satara. The Rabbeinu Shalom said to Moshe Rabbeinu, before Yitzias Mitzrayim begins, when Moshe Rabbeinu gets in the vision of the Rabbeinu Shalom, that you come back to Chayrev, and there you're going to serve the Rabbeinu Shalom. So the effect of the Sfiras HaEmor is a countdown. Why we don't count down and we count up, that's the Sefer HaChinuch talks about, it's not for today. So it's a countdown. It's a countdown until we get to Shavuos. So it shows how much we anticipated, we longed to have been connected with the Rabbeinu Shalom's Torah. And therefore we're counting day by day, another day closer, another day closer, another day closer, until we actually get there. So then it's the notion of the Kabbalah Satara, and how cherished the Kabbalah Satara is for Klal Yisrael, that we count towards the Kabbalah Satara. That's the Sefer HaChinuch's version. The Mekubalim are similar, but on a different, a Kabbalistic plane. The starting point is the famous parish of the Shlo. So the symbol pshat is that Paro kicked them out and they couldn't wait, they just had to run. But in actuality, the Medrash says otherwise. The Medrash says that Paro came to Mitzrayim and told him to leave. And Moshe Rabbeinu said, I'm not leaving, I'll leave when I want. So Paro wasn't able to chase him out. It was the middle of the night, he said, I'm not leaving. When I'm ready to leave, I'll leave. And then the morning, he left. But when Paro came, he told him, no, I'm not leaving. So he was not actually, in that regard, according to the Medrash, forced out. So the Shlomo learns Pshat. Is because we could no longer wait. Meaning that our spirituality had reached such a low ebb that if we waited any longer, we would have lost our connection to Avraham Avinu. We would have been so far gone from Avraham Avinu that we could not have reconnected. The Rebbeinu Shlomo could not bring us back from that point, or would not bring us back from that point. Because we were just totally lost our connection to Avraham Avinu. So therefore, we had to leave Mitzrayim at that moment. So the 49 days of Sfira, according to the Mekubalim, is to rise above the levels of Tumah, to be Roy, to be Mekabel Ter, to prepare, to raise ourselves, to be Mekadish ourselves. So both of these have to do with Kabbalah Sater. One is just an enigma, in a sense, anticipation. According to the Mekubalim, it's how we prepared ourselves spiritually, through spiritual elevation, through spiritual rectification, to come to Kabbalah Sater. So the problem that both, I have no problem with either of Pshatim, and I'm sure they're both Emes Lamito. But there must be another Pshat. Why do I say there must be another Pshat? Because neither of these Pshatim is intimated at all in the Pasha. If you learn Pasha of Sura Saimer, there's no reason that you should come to this. So according to Pshat, what's the Pshat in Sura Saimer? Lefiya Pshat. Right? These are nice notions. Machshava, Kabbalah, whatever, fine. So, but in the dimension of Pshat, what's the union of the Surah Saima? That's the Shaila. So this stymied me for a long time. What's the dimension of Pshat? And I was stymied because I was very focused in my research. When I became less focused, then I found the answer. What do I mean I was focused? Well, you want to know what Sfiras HaOmer is about? So learn Usfatim L'chemim Ochrod Shabbos, the parasha of Sfiras HaOmer. Shivashuot Tispaloch, the parasha of Sfiras HaOmer. So I looked, and I didn't find anything which connected to what I wanted. So I was stuck. Then one fine day, I was learning the Sforno at the very beginning of Parsha Samayadis, not by Usfartum Lechem, but when he talks about Pesach, when he the beginning of Parsha Samayadis in Emor, this week's Parsha. So there the Sforno writes a lengthy Hakdomo to the whole Parsha Samayadis on the very beginning, on Pesach. So later on he doesn't repeat it. So if you read the Hakdomo, so then you know what he wants. So it's going on. Otherwise, Pesukim doesn't spell it out. So in the Hakdama, he says the Chagim really parallel the Mishnah, the beginning of the ninth parak in Brochas. It says if a person comes to a city, what's he supposed to do? Is Nisan Hedola Ovar, give praise that the Rabbeinu Shalom has brought him here safely, and Tzoyik Ala Osit. And to be Mufakish Rachamim, that he should finish his business here and get out of here in one piece. So all of life is supposed to be like this. Listen, a dollar over. Thank the Rebbeinu Shalom for what has passed. And we ask for rachamim for the future. So the Sforno says this is the whole Parsha Samayadis. The whole Parsha Samayadis is exactly this point. Is to give a dollar over and tefillah ala osid. We have tefillahs connected korbonos tiknum. So that means the carbon represents tefillah. They equal each other. We don't have the carbon, so we have the tefillahs. But the one takes the place of the other. Din of the chagim, according to some, even with the rice, there is a din halo on the chagim. mit Paramikra Kodesh. You think of Haido, the Chagam or Inyanam of Haido. So there's Haido and Tvilo and every Chag. And the Smarno says, what's the Pshat? There are different dimensions, different ways to look at it. But let's look at it in the simplest of Pshatim. At the simplest level of Pshat, when we look at the Chagim as they mark the milestones in the agricultural calendar. You plant Chodesh Cheshvan, right after Sukkot. Then goes a whole winter, goes by. The seeds are in the ground. Is anything going to come out? Not come out. All winter goes by, you don't know. All of a sudden it starts to get to spring, and all of a sudden things start coming out of the ground. The greens start to pop out. So if things go well, so you have a nice set of greens as Pesach approaches. The agriculture was alive. I lived in the summer in a place where there were a lot of cornfields. So I was once speaking to one of these fellows. So he has a regular day job, and then he has a lot of cornfields next to his house. And he said he makes enough money to pay his taxes and whatever, the things, the upkeep. But he needs for the land, for the house. He makes enough money in selling corn for that. So his investment was $9,000 a year, and he made about $20,000 profit, I think. And nice, he had a few cornfields. So normally you come in August, and the plants of the corn, they're taller than a person. The high, the green, the lush. Near the bottom, you have the ear of corn. You know, that's normally what happens by the time August rolls around. One year, there was no rain in the Catskills. Almost no rain. So all over, the corn fields were blighted. You came. The plants were this high off the ground in August. There was no corn in them. They didn't develop. Put everything into the ground. Thousands of dollars plus work. And at the end, what did he have? A bunch of junk. That's it. Nothing. Nothing. Total loss. So we planted in Cheshvan. Comes Pesach and Rosh Hashem. The greens are sprouting. The seeds are sprouting. The things are starting to push up through the soil. Oh, we have a good beginning. So, nice saying, Haido Al Avar. We thank the Rabbeinu Shalom that from Cheshvan until now went well. And the Korban Omer, the Korban is a tefillah, ala osid, that the rest of the growing season should go grow well. Between Pesach and Shavuos is the main time the crops have to develop. We're going to get, is it going to be solid or not? Is the weather conditions going to be favorable or not? So the Korban is a tefillah ala osid. Comes to Shavuos. Shavuos is pretty much the end of the growing season. By then, things have grown. They're ready to begin the harvest. So if we reach that point, and we can start to cut them down. So we give Haido that we reach this point. And we bring Karbonos and Shavuos. That now we have the work of gathering the crops. We have to put them out in the fields. They have to dry sufficiently that we can bring them in, that they won't rot. It can't be too hot, it can't be too wet, or everything's going to go down the tubes. So that's the avoda from Shavuos until Sukkot time, is to process the crops, leave them in the field that they should dry sufficiently that you could say bring them inside, pack them away. And now, if you succeed, so you have food for the whole winter in the warehouse. So if we make it, so Shavuos, we ask the Rabbeinu Shalom, again, we bring Haido Al Avar and Karbonos Tefillah Al Osed, that we should succeed in gathering the harvest properly. And if Baruch Hashem, we make it to Sukkot and the harvest went well, so it was Haido Al Avar that Baruch Hashem, we succeeded. And now we bring Karbonos for what? We're about to start the next cycle. They ask the Rabbeinu Shalom, so that's Tefillah. So he says, those are the elements of Parsha Samayadis, the Haido Al Avar and the Tzayek Al Osed. He said, in that context, he says, he understands Hiras Omer, as Fono says. So it comes out that especially the time from Pesach until Shavuos, is that's the main time of the development of the crops. They just have started to develop over the winter, but the main development takes place at that time of the year. So he says, now we need an abundance of tefillah. The Sefiras HaOmer is that each day we should realize is a day in its own right. It's a day to be mispalo before the Rabbeinu Shel Olam. Don't let it slip away. It's a day to daven. Each day is a day. Don't lose it. Make sure you mispalo today. So that's what the Sforno says. That's the meaning of the Sefiras HaOmer. It's rooted, it's an etzem understanding of just the dynamics of the parsha. Of what the Chagim, the Haidor of the Chagim, and the Karbonos, and the Tfilis of the Chagim. So the Sforno Ledaiti is Lefi Derech HaPshat, and what Sefiras HaOmer is. V'derach ha-pshat. The chido is rooted, really his pshat, and like Bo'imer, is rooted in the Sefer HaChinuch and the Mekubalim. In other words, the thrust of his time of the year is Torah. It's the Hachonah LaKabbalah Sator. It's the season of Kabbalah Sator. And the various aspects of anticipating that Kabbalah Satora, Pinigla, Pinister. So according to the Chidah, that's Lag BaOmer. Lag BaOmer is a day to celebrate the survival, the perpetuation of the Rabbeinu Shel Olam's Torah. So he fits in very, very well with those Pshatim that place the emphasis, on Torah. So, this is the Chidah's insight. As I said, he does not, in the place that I saw it in the Chidah, he does not give us a source. I don't know what source he has for this, how he knows this. But this is what the Chidah writes. The new yeshiva began on this day. And this is the eternal hope of the Jewish people and all the deris, that in the Torah, the Rabbeinu Shel Olam wrote, Hilos Yishochach Mipizara. That somehow the Torah will not be forgotten. How that's going to happen, none of us know. But you have to be a person of tremendous faith to believe it under difficult circumstances. Rabbi Akiva believed it in one of the darkest hours of Jewish history. The people of the era of the Crusades believed it in one of the darkest hours of Jewish history. And fortunately for us, the Gedolei Olam that believed it in the ashes of the Holocaust. And where they found the strength and their tremendous personal suffering in their own families, their own the losses, that they lost tremendous amounts of family in the war. The Imri Emes, the Gerer Rebbe, there was a letter, it was dated Tovshin Vov, the year after the war. It hung in the Gerer Besmedrash in Williamsburg. I used to go there sometimes. And on the wall was a letter from the Imri Emes, written in Tovshin Vov. And what does he write? He says, a few lines. Past is the past. Our ASIC is the future. We have to look to the future. That's it. To come out of the horrors of the Holocaust, with all the personal tragedies that they went through. But where is our head? Our head is going forward. What are we doing for the future? So he was a Talmud of Aaron Kotler, a Tzal that I knew. So he spoke to Irving Buna once. Irving Buna was a major askin for the Jewish community. So Irving Gunan told him that when Aaron Kotler Zatzal arrived in Grand Central Station, he had escaped to Japan, and then from Japan he came, I think, to the West Coast, I think to San Francisco, and from the West Coast he took a train, and he arrived in Grand Central Station. So Sir Irving Gunan said, I figured there's a man that's been running for his life for a year and a half now. He's on the run. So he finally comes to a place of Merucha. He's going to want to put his feet up a little, catch his breath, and then figure out what he wants to do. I go to greet him at Grand Central Station. He gets off the train, greets me, and then he says to me, he says, Mr. Bunim, he says, where and when are we starting the yeshiva? And I think even that day, maybe they called together already people in Manhattan, Gvirim, from Gvirim, to help get the yeshiva off the ground. And within a week, he was saying to Shir already to Talmidim. It's a person of unbelievable amunah. To walk out of the ashes of the Holocaust and not even stop to catch his breath. But there's work to be done. And just get to work. The same is true. It's one of the most amazing letters that I've ever read in my life. The Satmar Rebbe Zecher Tzadik Livrocha. He came here about 1946, 47, I think about. He came to the United States. He survived the war. Went to Eretz Yisrael, and he decided to come to the United States. And he went to Chicago to raise money for his nascent yeshiva. And he came back and he wrote a letter to the Rabbonim in Chicago that they should continue to help him. He needs the help. He's almost plaintive in the letter. He says he was 61 years old already. He says, like, you might ask, in effect, he says, why am I undertaking this at this age? He says, but Chazal said, if you had Talmidim in your youth, have Talmidim in your older years too. He said, in my youth, I had thousands of Talmidim. He says, all of that is gone. He says, in my youth, money was not an object to me. I had Frum industrialists at my side, and they took care of my financial needs, plus some money came from the parents at the Bochum and Yeshiva, and we were fine. I had no problems. Today, he says, my Talmidim are gone, my Chassidim are gone, my industrialists are gone. I have 300 Yisayimim that I took in. I have another 300 Simon that I'm waiting to take in. I don't have room to put them yet. And he's almost apologetic that he's starting. Like, at your age, you're starting to Sanu Yeshiva? What's with you? And what did he build? He built the biggest keila in the world. The biggest from keila in the world. Doilim of all different stripes, but united in their amuna of the Nitzchias, of the eternity of the Rabbeinu Shel Olam's Torah. Under any and all circumstances, it can thrive. In its darkest hours, they can light the torch of Torah and kindle it again. And this is what Chidor tells us. This was the message of Lag BaOmer. Rabbi Akiva came at a dark hour in Jewish history. What's the future going to hold? Where do we go? What do we do? And he sits down, he has five Talmidim. Five Talmidim. I had 24,000 Talmidim the last time. What is this? Undaunted. The belief in the eternity of the Nitzchias of the Jewish people and in the Nitzchias of the Rabbeinu Shel Olam's Torah. The Yavetz, I asked my Talmidim today, I said, you know, tomorrow morning, 9 o'clock if you want, so I'm going to bring a bus, park it outside the yeshiva, and if you want, you can come with me. We're going to take a trip tomorrow, and I'm going to show you Nisim that are greater than the Nisim of Yetzias Mitzrayim. You want to come? Bus will be outside 9 in the morning. Yeah, everyone's interested in coming. Nisim bigger than Yetzias Mitzrayim? That's a good one, you know? We certainly want to come. We got to see this one. So the Yaivetz, it is Akdoma de Siddur, Vesyaku, it's near the beginning of, not Mamash at the beginning, but near the beginning. I'm telling you because the Akdoma is very long. The Yaivetz says, the Rosh Hashanah Zatzal used to quote this often, if you want to see Nisim that are greater than the Nisim of Yitzias Mitzrayim, he says, study the survival of the Jewish people in Golos. And even more so, the survival of the Rabbeinu Shalom's Torah in the Golos. And the Nisim that are attendant to that, he says, Chaynafshi, he says, I swear that they are greater than the Nisim of Yitzias Mitzrayim. And when we stop and look at the world in which we're in, 60 years ago, who thought there'd be such a thing as from people? And Talmidei Chachamim in America? That's almost was an oxymoron, Talmidei Chachamim in America. How could such a thing be? I went in the early 70s once, about 1971 or so, to a shul in South Orange, New Jersey. Okay. How far from the Holland Tunnel? What? I don't remember the name. It was in South Orange. Okay, that's it. 15, 20 minutes, something like that. 25 minutes from the tunnel. They couldn't believe that there were people that were 20 years old that knew how to daven for the Omer and read a Haftarah. Their eyes popped out of their heads. Couldn't believe such a thing. In America, young people that know how to read the Haftarah, they know how to daven for the Omer. They were in a state of shock. And today the Metzius is that Kimat in every Kehillah in Klal Yisrael today, wherever you go, in the smallest towns. I hear from people constantly. No matter Kimat, wherever you go, there are in every Kehillah a few Chevra that know from learning. So you cannot get up in most shuls in this country unless you solve it. There's somebody there that's going to catch on to you. Wherever it is, there are learned people across the entire United States today. Some places have a lot, some places have a little, but it's kimat all over. There are some measure of learned people. We witnessed in our time this nace again. I always say to Rabbeinu Shalom, as Rabbis Machshavos B'Levish, Vatzas Hashem Yisokom. The altar of Slobodka was concerned that the tremendous spiritual descent in Eastern Europe at the beginning of the 20th century. And especially was accelerated with the events, the disruptions of the First World War. But the First World War accelerated greatly. So what did the Alter do? So the Alter gathered great Talmidei Chachamim circa 1920. And his goal was to produce tremendous gedolim that would be able to illuminate Europe with the Torah in the next door. Who are his figures? Any Rosh Hashiva would be happy if he had one of them. But from one yeshiva came forth Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky, Rav Aaron Kotler, Rav Ruderman, Rav Hutner and Rav David Leibowitz, to mention five. Okay? Five. All came from one yeshiva. Any yeshiva would be happy to have one of them as their Talmud. The Alter had all five as his Talmud. You come to the, and what the Rabbeinu Shalom did, the Rabbeinu Shalom had a different plan. The Rabbeinu Shalom didn't have in mind the Torah of Europe. The Rabbeinu Shalom had in mind the Torah of America. And these figures came with the giants of Torah. Right? This is where Chaim Berlin Yeshiva is, and Chofetz Chaim Yeshiva is, and Eretz Yisrael is, and Beis Medrash Gavoa, Lakewood is, and the Godel Ador of Yaakov Kamenetsky. From one Rebbe. The Rabbeinu Shel Olam, Rabbis Machshavos B'Lev Shtalter wanted to preserve Torah in Europe. And most of the European yeshivas were in fact established directly or indirectly by the Alta. Mir was established, it was put on its feet again, it was in bad shape. And 100 years ago, the Alta put it back on its feet. They sent Reblazer Yudel to become the Roshuva there. And tells that its difficulties that are reestablished. And as someone said, the Torah which thrives in the 20th century, in the early 20th century, is the Torah of the altar. That's the Torah that thrives. But the Rabbeinu Shel Olam had his own plan. The Rabbeinu Shel Olam didn't intend these Gdolim to be for Europe. The Rabbeinu Shel Olam intended them to build Torah in the United States. So, before the Churban came, the Rabbeinu Shel Olam already prepared the Gdolim that were going to come to this country and lay the basis for Torah, for what's the thriving of Torah in our country. So this is what, when they established Lag BaOmer, this is what they saw. That we go through dark hours, but the Rabbeinu Shel Olam's Nisim allows us to preserve the Torah of the Dorei Doros. Good night, Rabbi Yisrael. Mamal Shah.